aunt looked at Butler, Butler looked at aunt. I looked at both of them. An eerie stillness seemed to envelop the room like a linseed poultice. I happened to be biting on a slice of apple at my fruit salad at the moment, and it sounded as if Carnera had jumped off the top of the Eiffel Tower onto a cucumber frame. Aunt Dahlia steadied herself against the sideboard and spoke in a low, husky voice.
"Faces?"
Yes, madam.
"Through the skylight?"
"Yes, madam."
"You mean he's sitting on the roof?"
"Yes, madam. It has upset Monsieur Anatole very much."
I suppose it was that word upset that touched Aunt Dahlia off. Experience had taught her what happened when Anatole got upset. I had always known her as a woman who was quite active on her pins, but I had never suspected her of being capable of the magnificent burst of speed which she now showed. Pausing merely to get a rich hunting field expletive off her chest, she was out of the room and making for the stairs before I could swallow a sliver of, I think, banana. And feeling, as I had felt when I got that telegram of hers about Angela and Tuppy, that my place was by her side, I put down my plate and hastened after her, Seppings following at a loping gallop. I say that my place was by her side, but it was not so dashed easy to get there, for she was setting a cracking pace. At the top of the first flight, she must have led by a matter of half a dozen lengths, and was still shaking off my challenge when she rounded into the second. At the next landing, however, the gruelling going appeared to tell on her, for she slackened off a trifle and showed symptoms of roaring, and by the time we were in the straight, we were running practically neck and neck. Our entry into Anatole's room was as close a finish as you could have wished to see. Result: 1 Aunt Dahlia, 2 Bertram, 3 Seppings, 1 by a short head, half a staircase separated second and third. The first thing that met the eye on entering was Anatole. This wizard of the cooking stove is a tubby little man with a moustache of the outsize or stoop strainer type, and you can generally take a line through it as to the state of his emotions. When all is well, it turns up at the ends like a sergeant major's. When the soul is bruised, it droops. It was drooping now, striking a sinister note, and if any shadow of doubt had remained as to how he was feeling, the way he was carrying on would have dispelled it. He was standing by the bed in pink pyjamas, waving his fists at the skylight. Through the glass, Gussie was staring down. His eyes were bulging, and his mouth was open, giving him so striking a resemblance to some rare fish in an aquarium that one's primary impulse was to offer him an ant's egg. Watching this fist-waving cook and this goggling guest, I must say that my sympathies were completely with the former. I considered him thoroughly justified in waving all the fists he wanted to. Review the facts, I mean to say. There he had been, lying in bed, thinking idly of whatever French cooks do think about when in bed, and he'd suddenly become aware of that frightful face at the window, a thing to jar the most phlegmatic. I know I should hate to be lying in bed and have Gussie popping up like that. A chap's bedroom, you can't get away from it, is his castle, and he has every right to look askance if gargoyles come glaring in at him. While I stood musing thus, Aunt Dahlia, in her practical way, was coming straight to the point. "What's all this?" Anatole did a sort of Swedish exercise, starting at the base of the spine, carrying on through the shoulder blades, and finishing up among the back hair. Then he told her. "In the chats I have had with this wonder man, I have always found his English fluent, but a bit on the mixed side. If you remember, he was with Mrs. Bingo Little for a time before coming to Brinkley, and no doubt he picked up a good deal from Bingo. Before that, he'd been a couple of years with an American family at Nice, and had studied under their chauffeur, one of the Maloneys of Brooklyn. So what with Bingo, and what with Maloney, he is, as I say, fluent, but a bit mixed." He spoke, in part, as follows.
"Hot dog, you ask me what is it. Listen, make some attention a little. Me, I have hit the A, but I do not sleep so good. And presently, I wake, and up I look, and there is one who makes faces against me through the dash window. Is that a pretty affair? Is that convenient? If you think I like it, you jolly well mistake yourself. I am so mad as a wet hen. And why not? I am somebody, isn't it? This is a bedroom. What? Not a house for some apes? Then for what do blighters sit on my window so cool as a few cucumbers making some faces?"
"Quite," I said. dash reasonable was my verdict. He threw another look up at Gussie and did exercise two, the one where you clutch the moustache, give it a tug, and then start catching flies.
Wait yet a little. I am not finish. I see this type on my window, making a few faces. But what then? Does he buzz off when I shout a cry and leave me peaceable? Not on your life. He remained planted there, not giving any damns, and sit regarding me like a cat watching a duck. He make faces against me, and again he make faces against me. And the more I command that he should get too well out of here, the more he do not get too well out of here. He cries only towards me, and I demand what is his desire, but he do not explain. Oh no, that arrives never. He does but shrug his head. What damn silliness. Is this amusing for me? You think I like it? I am not content with such folly. I think the poor mutt's loony. Je me fiche de ce type infect. C'est idiot de faire comme ça, l'oiseau. Allez-vous-en, loufier. Tell the boob to go away. He is mad as some marchatters.
I must say, I thought he was making out a jolly good case, and evidently Aunt Delia felt the same. She laid a quivering hand on his shoulder.
I will, Monsieur Anatole, I will, she said.
And I couldn't have believed that robust voice capable of sinking such an absolute coup. More like a turtle dove calling to its mate than anything else.
It's quite all right.
She had said the wrong thing. He did exercise three.
All right. No. The hell you say it's all right. Of what use to pull stuff like that? Wait one half moment. Not yet so quick, my old sport. It is by no means all right. See yet again a little. It is some very different dishes of fish. I can take a few smooths with a rough, it is true, but I do not find it agreeable when one play lark against me on my windows. That cannot do. A nice thing, no. I am a serious man. I do not wish a few larks on my windows. I enjoy larks on my windows worse than any. It is very little all right. If such Rane Gazoo is to arrive, I do not remain any longer in this house no more. I buzz off and do not stay planted.
Sinister words, I had to admit, and I was not surprised that Aunt Delia, hearing them, should have uttered a cry like the wail of a master of hounds seeing a fox shot. Anatole had begun to wave his fists again at Gussie, and she now joined him. Seppings, who was puffing respectfully in the background, didn't actually wave his fists, but he gave Gussie a pretty austere look. It was plain to the thoughtful observer that this Finknottle, in getting onto that skylight, had done a mistaken thing. He couldn't have been more unpopular in the home of G.G. Simmons.
"Go away, you crazy loon!"
cried Aunt Delia, in that ringing voice of hers which had once caused nervous members of the Quorn to lose stirrups and take tosses from the saddle. Gus's reply was to waggle his eyebrows. I could read the message he was trying to convey. "I think he means..." I said, reasonable old Bertram, always trying to throw oil on the troubled W's, that if he does, he will fall down the side of the house and break his neck.
Well, why not?
Said Aunt Delia. I could see her point, of course, but it seemed to me that there might be a nearer solution. This skylight happened to be the only window in the house which Uncle Tom had not festooned with his ballet bars. I suppose he felt that if a burglar had the nerve to climb up as far as this, he deserved what was coming to him. If you open the skylight, he could jump in. The idea got across.
Seppings, how does this skylight open?
With a pole, madam.
Then get a pole. Get 2 poles, 10.
And presently Gussie was mixing with the company. Like one of those chaps you read about in the papers, the wretched man seemed deeply conscious of his position. I must say, Aunt Delia's bearing and demeanour did nothing to assist towards a restored composure. Of the amiability which she had exhibited when discussing this unhappy chump's activities with me over the fruit salad, no trace remained, and I was not surprised that speech more or less froze on the Finknottle lips. It isn't often that Aunt Delia, normally as genial a bird as ever encouraged a gaggle of hounds to get their noses down to it, lets her angry passions rise, but when she does, strong men climb trees and pull them up after them.
"Well?"
she said. In answer to this, all that Gussie could produce was a sort of strangled hiccup.
Well?
Aunt Delia's face grew darker. Hunting, if indulged in regularly over a period of years, is a pastime that seldom fails to lend a fairly deepish tinge to the patient's complexion, and her best friends could not have denied that even at normal times the relative's map tended a little towards the crushed strawberry. But never had I seen it take on so pronounced a richness as now. She looked like a tomato struggling for self-expression.
Well?
Gussie tried hard, and for a moment it seemed as if something was going to come through. But in the end, it turned out nothing more than a sort of death rattle.
Oh, take him away, Bertie, and put ice on his head, said Aunt Dahlia, giving the thing up.
And she turned to tackle what looked like the rather man-sized job of soothing Anatole, who was now carrying on a muttered conversation with himself in a rapid sort of way. Seeming to feel that the situation was one to which he could not do justice in bingo-cum-Maloney Anglo-American, he had fallen back on his native tongue. Words like marmiton de domange, pignouf, burlu-burlu, and roustisseur were fluttering from him like bats out of a barn. Lost on me, of course, because though I sweated a bit at the Gallic language during that can visit, I'm still more or less in the escavouzave stage. I regretted this, for they sounded good. I assisted Gussie down the stairs. A cooler thinker than Aunt Dahlia, I had already guessed the hidden springs and motives which had led him onto the roof. Where she had seen only a cock-eyed reveller indulging himself in a drunken prank or whimsy, I had spotted the hunted fawn. "Was Tuppy after you?" I asked sympathetically. What I believe is called a frisson shook him.
He nearly got me on the top landing. I shinned out through a passage window and scrambled along a sort of ledge.
That baffled him, what?
Yes, but then I found I'd stuck. The roof sloped down in all directions. I couldn't go back. I had to go on crawling along this ledge. Then I found myself looking down the skylight. Who was that chap?
That was Anatole, Aunt Delia's chef.
French?
To the core.
That explains why I couldn't make him understand. What asses these Frenchmen are. They don't seem able to grasp the simplest thing. You'd have thought that if a chap saw a chap on a skylight, the chap would realise the chap wanted to be let in. But no, he just stood there, waving a few fists.
Yes, silly idiot.
Still, here I am.
Here you are, yes, for the moment.
Eh?
I was thinking that Tuppy is probably lurking somewhere. He leapt like a lamb in springtime.
What shall I do?
I considered this. Sneak back to your room and barricade the door. That is the manly policy.
Suppose that's where he's lurking.
In that case, move elsewhere. But on arrival at the room, it transpired that Tuppy, if anywhere, was infesting some other portion of the house. Gussie shot in and I heard the key turn. And feeling that there was no more I could do in that quarter, I returned to the dining room for further fruit salad and a quiet think. And I'd barely filled my plate when the door opened and Aunt Dahlia came in. She sank into a chair, looking a bit shop-worn.
Give me a drink, Bertie.
What sort?
Any sort, so long as it's strong.
Approach Bertram Wooster along these lines and you catch him at his best. St. Bernard Dogs, doing the square thing by Alpine travellers, could not have bustled about more assiduously. I filled the order, and for some moments nothing was to be heard but the sloshing sound of an aunt restoring her tissues. "Shove it down, Aunt Dahlia," I said sympathetically. "These things take it out of one, don't they? You had a toughish time, no doubt, soothing Anatole," I proceeded, helping myself to anchovy paste on toast. "Everything pretty smooth now, I trust?" She gazed at me in a long, lingering sort of way, her brow wrinkled as if in thought. "Attila," she said at length. "That's the name. Attila the Hun."
Eh? I was trying to think who you reminded me of. Somebody who went about strewing ruin and desolation and breaking up homes, which until he came along had been happy and peaceful. Attila is the man. It's amazing, she said, drinking me in once more. To look at you, one would think you were just an ordinary, sort of amiable idiot. Certifiable, perhaps, but quite harmless. Yet in reality, you are a worse scourge than the Black Death. I tell you, Bertie, when I contemplate you, I seem to come up against all the underlying sorrow and horror of life with such a thud that I feel as if I'd walked into a lamppost. Pained and surprised, I would have spoken, but the stuff I had thought was anchovy paste had turned out to be something far more gooey and adhesive. It seemed to wrap itself round the tongue and impede utterance like a gag.
and while I was still endeavouring to clear the vocal cords for action, she went on.